Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hulkrin, along with the Bailing brothers, Andy and Nick, are here with us talking all about mixed martial arts. And as with every week, these sports gets busier and busier and busier. We've got a little bit of controversy to start with, so we're going to talk about the FS1 card from this past weekend, because people are still, I don't know that enraged is a proper terminology, but they're clearly, and Nick, you and I are in opposite camps in this, and Andy, I don't actually know where you landed, but enraged isn't it, but there are the Cruz people and the Dillashaw people, and never the two shall mix at this point. So if you missed the fight, it was every bit, I will start with this, it was every bit as amazing as I wanted it to be. Like, it was just a fantastic fight where you got to see these two guys doing what we wanted them to do. But for me, when I was watching it, I'll come right out and say I scored 1 through 3 for Cruz, and I gave 4 and 5 to Dillashaw. And I just think it all came down to the injury that happened in the fourth that allowed Dillashaw to just kind of take the pace. And I also think Robin Black did a great piece with Luke Thomas this past week on Monday, and he was talking about how they were also concerned about, and Nick, you can talk about this, around 4 and 5 being a difficult thing for Cruz to actually train for, because you've been out for so long that those quote-unquote championship rounds are just hard to anticipate. And so even without the injury, I think most people thought 4 and 5 were going to be Dillashaw, probably.
Yeah, it's the debated on the first round of what it was. I don't think it was really, it wasn't really much of a contest for the 2 and 3 and then 4 and 5 on who's going to be taking that one. So it ended up being that the first round is actually the debated one, and Andy and I were actually playing scratch pad scorekeepers that night, and we both scored the first round, fourth round, and fifth round for Dillashaw.
Dillashaw, yeah. And like I said to you on Monday, I'm not mad of people that think Dillashaw won. I think that unlike the Lawler-Condit fight, I don't think there's not as much controversy, because I think this fight is such a finesse fight, Andy, that most people probably don't even know what they watched.
Yeah, it was definitely watching that fight was, I mean, there's so much footwork, there's so much movement. It was like two guys mirroring each other. Before the fight started, Nick said, this is either going to be the craziest, awesome fight to watch, or two guys that are so good at doing what they're doing that they never end up touching each other. And, it was entertaining, definitely, to watch those similar styles going against.
But what is incredible is when you get out of this and you start reading, and we get to see things that the judges don't see, like fight metrics, and you see that TJ Dillashaw missed 299 punches, to me tells a much different story than perhaps what you saw on the screen. And I know we're all scoring in the moment, but when you have one guy who missed nearly 300 punches on the other guy, that's what I mean by people not knowing what they're watching. Lots of people, and I know, Nick, you were talking about this on Twitter, and people that we know talking about that Cruz was running. Well, Cruz wasn't running. He was dictating the pace of the fight, where he wanted it to go and when he wanted to do it, up until the fourth round, when he clearly got hobbled a little bit and couldn't do that anymore. But even in the end of the fifth, if it's pride, you could have a discussion about those last 10 or 15 seconds being his, because in pride rules, that's what it was. If you were the dude that turned it on in the last minute, it didn't matter what happened to the other 9. You probably won the round.
Yeah, well, he was claiming, what did it come out as? Is plantar fasciitis.
Which is, if you've never had it, it's like the most difficult thing to, because it comes and goes. It's hard to get rid of. It's just extremely painful. And I don't know what version he had, because I've had it right on my left heel. It's super painful and hard to deal with, because you never know when it's going to happen, and probably in the fourth round of a championship fight is not the ideal time for that to happen.
I wouldn't say that those legs kicked helped that at all, though. I mean,
no. I mean, I luckily don't have people kicking me all day long while I'm experiencing it, so he is in a much worse position than I've ever been in, but I can tell you it's extremely painful.
Yeah, and you know, the leg kicks putting him in early in the round, they do pay off. So you can claim the plantar fasciitis, which I totally believe that he has, but the leg kicks are going to add up. And if there was a time when you have a bunch of nerve damage upper in your leg, I don't know how it works. I'm not a doctor, but I'm sure that that doesn't help.
Well,
bring it on.
And I'm not saying that that's the excuse, but if he's in a fight like this, which is different than, let's say, the terrible Mitrione Travis Brown fight, right? A fight like this where we're talking about an inch, a centimeter, a second difference. If you are slower by a second from the third round to the fourth round, that allows Dillashaw to connect with those leg kicks. It's not an excuse, but it's the thing that allows that to happen because it wasn't happening in the first three rounds.
Well, yeah, and I think it might have been you watched Dillashaw just lob those all those missed kicks, the head kicks that he had, and I think he was starting to realize that the head kicks weren't going to be there, and so he started resorting to the leg kicks. And, you know, maybe it would have paid off more if he had started like that, because who would have ever thought you could kick Cruz in the head? Has that ever happened, ever?
Right. Right. The one part of his body that you probably won't be able to hit very much is his head. That's not the place that I would aim.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think, too, one thing on that, when if you think about plantar fasciitis, getting leg kicked, obviously, is never going to feel good. But if you are Cruz as well, there could have been a time where he landed a kick himself that ended up grazing more foot than shin,
sure,
where it definitely tweaked that as well. So take that on with getting kicked, but also throwing a kick. I've had a little version of that before, probably nothing at the level that he had. But I couldn't imagine kicking something, kicking a pad, kicking a bag when I had that. It would be an extremely painful feeling.
So what do you guys do next? Do you think he gets Dillashaw again? Do you want to see that again, or are we going in a different direction?
I personally would rather see them get away from every time there's a title fight that's somewhat close, talking about a rematch. I've always been a Uriah Faber fan, and I would like to see those guys fight one more time. I think that would be a good next step, and I think it's a marketable fight for the UFC.
It's a marketable fight. I think I was telling you, Nick, or Julian, I don't remember who I was telling, but as much as I don't think he would win, I would be really excited to see DJ and Cruz again.
Yeah.
I don't think DJ can still keep up with him, but that first fight, I remember specifically when that first fight happened at 35. When it was over, I was with Ken Evans, and I turned to him, I go, here's what's going to happen. They're going to invent 125, and DJ's going to go down and wipe the floor with every human being that's there because nobody will be able to touch him because there's nobody like Dominic Cruz elsewhere on the planet. But at this point, nobody's going to take it from him, and I think you saw that on Sunday night, that when he's at his best, you're just not – you're not as good as he is, even if you're TJ Dillashaw.
I think even at the end of the fight, you saw that you have a fragile champion. So I wouldn't mind seeing the, you know, his knees, his foot now, and he's got things, his groin. It's probably a accumulation of all this movement that he does. And, you know, he's obviously an in-shape, incredible athlete, but I'd like to see Faber Dillashaw because that storyline is just fantastic.
Yep. And I think for marketability, Andy, I mean, that's a big money fight if you've got two people that literally hate each other. I mean, I don't remember if it was after the fight or it was after the fight. Uriah did like 15 minutes of essentially stand-up for the MMA media about how much he hates TJ Dillashaw. So I'm with you. Like, let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that. I don't even know if you need to have Cruz do anything in that time. Let him either, like, the champ of that one come out or the winner of that fight come out of it, and then there, you have your next fight. And if it is a rematch, it's an earned rematch, and you allow Cruz to heal up from whatever whatever ails him that day.
And maybe, and I don't know, but since we all work in marketing, we can put our hats on and kind of think about that. Like, maybe that level of hatred between Dillashaw and Faber could bring more people in the same way that Conor McGregor reignited featherweight, right? Nobody cared about Jose Aldo for a decade. He destroyed people for 10 years, and the buy rates were like, 7 people are going to watch Jose Aldo this weekend when he fights whomever. Conor McGregor enters the picture, and now we're doing million-person buy rates, and I'm not saying that Dillashaw Faber is going to do 1 million if you put it on pay-per-view, but you're going to get people to tune into that weight class that wouldn't normally because, like you said, Faber is a guy that most dudes that watch this sport know, mm-hmm. and they're going to tune in for.
Yeah, I think if you put that on a pay-per-view in like a co-headline slot or even, you know, the third fight on a pay-per-view, I think that'd be a great position for a fight like that.
Yeah, you put it up against the Conor McGregor-Luke Rockhold fight that's coming up. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I'm just figuring, I mean, why stop at 155? Let's just keep going.
He's saying 170.
Of course he is. And we'll just go into that, and we'll come back and talk about how terrible a human being Travis Brown is, and we'll get into all that stuff. But, like, this week, if I'm the UFC, it's like I've never, in the 25 years of the company being around, I don't know that they've ever had. You had the headaches with Tito Ortiz. You had the headaches with Ken Shamrock. You had some headaches with the Iceman. You certainly had some headaches with Randy, but nothing like this. I mean, if he wins, and I've been saying this on the show, off the show, on Twitter, on Snapchat, RDA is not Aldo. I think RDA is going to be a much more difficult fight than Aldo was. All that being said, if he beats Rafael Dos Anjos, he's literally going to be able to hold this company hostage for whatever he wants to, and may never defend any of these belts. Like, he could go up and fight Lawler, and after that could go up to Rock. Like, it's going to be a nightmare scenario for those guys. A nightmare scenario.
He's going to be the first one, the first fighter that truly has a bargaining chip of who he is, and he gets to name the price of what he wants to do at a fight. The best thing that he's doing right now for himself is if he just gets mollywopped in this fight.
What the hell is that?
It's just a nice beating.
Gotcha. Is that a UP phrase?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'll take that one. All right. So if that happens, the best thing is he just goes, okay, and then he starts talking trash about his real weight class and talking about how, you know, he was going up to challenge himself and the challenge didn't work out, and then he still's champ in the next one. Even if they take his belt away, he's an immediate title contender for the next fight coming up in the lower class.
But I don't think they're going to take his belt away, because I think why I say this is a nightmare is that he's essentially paving the way for, you want to talk about a fighter's union, you want to talk about fighter's rights, this is the guy that's going to do it. Because he does not seem to care in the same way that Ronda cared to be a company person, in the same way that John Jones, all of his extracurricular activities aside, has been essentially a company man. Conor's, the only company man he is for the Conor company. And if he wins at 55... you're right. This is a guy who's going to have all the bargaining chips. This is a guy who can fight for his likeness back so that he's getting paid on UFC 2 when no other fighter is going to be paid on that video game from EA. This is a guy who can build an organization around him where the guys in his circle are getting that same sort of preferential treatment. And I think that's going to be something that the UFC is going to have to figure out how to handle with kid gloves, because he brings in droves of human beings and lots of money, and he backs up all the insane stuff that, you know, you still see right now. If we were log in, it's 10 o'clock in the morning on the eastern side of the country. If we log into Twitter, there's still people going, no chance against RDA. No chance at all. And these are the same people. No chance against Chad Mendes. No chance against Jose Aldo. And every single time, he's been able to turn it into gold. And I'm telling you, if he does it this time, I don't know who knows what the hell he's going to do. He literally could turn into, and you guys are a little bit younger than me, but he could turn into the Ultimate Warrior in the middle of the 80s, where the Ultimate Warrior was their champ, and Ken loves the story. It's like his favorite Ultimate Warrior story, is that the Ultimate Warrior could care less about the championship, so he would show up at airports and give his belt to kids. So that's why if you go back and watch, the belt is a different color every week, because they had to have them made that day, because he'd show up and they'd be like, where's your belt? Oh, I gave it to an 8-year-old at the airport. Like, that's who you're dealing with. Like, Conor McGregor being mad about his belt isn't in the poster for 197. Well, your belt isn't in 197 because you're not the champ at 55.
Well, just listen to how he talks. There's subtleties in what he's doing, and I think there's truth in that as well. It's him saying, that fight doesn't work for me. I'm going to give this guy an opportunity. Dana White's not answering any of those questions. He's talking about Frankie Edgar saying that he reeks of desperation when he's out there. And
well, because Frankie's, I love Frankie, but Frankie's like, I'll do it 55, I'll do it 45, I'll do it 62 and a half. Like, what? Just let me fight you. Please, let me fight you.
And this isn't the exact quote, but he said he doesn't want that stink of desperation to rub off on him. So he's letting RDA fight him. Or RDA, am I right?
Yep.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
Well, Nick and I were talking about that fight, too, and one of the things that, I mean, he talks so much that he's like, I'm going to beat RDA in under a minute. And Nick and I were talking last night, and we were talking about who we think is going to win that fight, and Nick was saying RDA. I'm like, no, McGregor's going to win in under a minute. He already said that. But it was weird that I honestly couldn't believe that I said that to him. Like, well, no, he said that. McGregor said that. So that's obviously, it may be a minute and a half, but he's going to roll through him because he's already claimed that.
Well, he's one of a very few amount of fighters on the roster, Andy, who is doing just that, who's using this power of visualization. I'm not going to get all weird on the podcast, I promise, but he's using this power of tricking his mind into thinking that that's a thing, that it becomes reality. And it's a really powerful motivator. And you read 7 self-help books, they're all going to tell you about this idea of visualization. Read any books about creativity, it's all going to tell you about daydreaming and how you take those daydreams and turn them into reality and all of that stuff. And he's manifesting that. And so I don't think a minute, but I think he's going to win it. Yeah. I just think mentally he's stronger than 80 or 90% of the roster.
Well, I literally felt bad watching Dos Anjos sit at that press conference and have him just tear him apart about his entire life and his home country and his family. It wouldn't even let the guy talk. And it was like getting in somebody's head like that. I don't care who you are. I know that some of that stuff had to affect RDA sitting there on the other side of the podium.
Well, and you know that he wants him to do that so that he stands in the middle and bangs with him, because if he can keep it at distance, he's going to just tear him apart. RDA needs to be close and on top of him in mount, and that's how he's going to win this fight. If he can get RDA super pissed about Brazil and his home country and his family and all that stuff so that he just wants to stand in the middle and bang, it probably is over in 13 seconds. It probably is.
Well, I think that was that last fight with Aldo, when he said he was going to come out and do exactly pretty much what he did, that had me sitting there really not even reacting on my couch, just being like, all right, yeah, that's what he called for, so that's what happened. But that was really weird that it happened that fast, but now I'm going to start believing everything he says.
Well, and it gets weirder when you see the backstage videos of him doing the punch before he goes out and do it. Like, it's just, he's just a creepily interesting individual in that way, that he just kind of manifests things to happen. But they're going to have their hands full if he wins at 97. Their hands will be absolutely full. Okay, let's get back to fight night 81, because I do want to talk about the Mitrione-Travis Brown fight, because it's a fun example of what can happen when you lose a fight and gain all of the accolades, right? Because Mitrione, always a game opponent. Nick, you and I were talking about it. It just depends on which one shows up, but he always shows up, and he can't see out of his eye for most of the fight, and then Travis Brown takes full advantage of that and breaks his lower orbital, right, I believe is what it is, and gets booed out of the building, as he should. So there's a couple things that are happening here. One, we've been calling on this show, and many people have been calling for this, that even in the Dominic Cruz-Dillashaw fight, like, there needs to be sweeping regulation that there are no more warnings. You got the warnings backstage. Dominic Cruz, if you grab the fence, guess what? You would have lost the fight, right? Take a point, you lose the fight. Travis Brown, you poke him in the eye, you lose a point. You poke him in the eye twice, you lose the fight. It's a DQ.
The warnings should come when it looks like it's about to happen. You know, like, stop palming, you know, before the eye poke happens. You can have a solid warning at that time.
But I think that's part of the problem, man, is that they do that stuff backstage. They tell you not to poke them in the eye. They tell you not to fish hook them. They tell you all of those things. And you just do this until it becomes convenient. I mean, the first one, as you and I were talking about, is a brutal, like, hit the full pinky into his eye.
Yeah, well, I've always said you get one freebie. Like, whatever you want to do illegally in the cage, you get one free one. And this is a case where he got two of them easily. And, like, they were both.
And won him the fight. I mean, like, you fought more than your brother and I combined. How would you do if you could only do it wearing a pirate eye patch, right?
I mean, it's a testament to Mitrione, because I would have just been like, well, this fight's over, and I would have said goodnight and called it a quit, and everyone would have booed me out. But instead, Mitrione ends up with a broken orbital and his
shoulder, right? Or a dislocation of his shoulder in that takedown?
Yeah, when he got slammed or however that ended up.
I mean, he's out. Like, he was in full on. Like, this is why people love that guy, and he's the reason I think people love him more than they love Roy Nelson, because Roy Nelson tried to be that guy, but Mitrione's that dude that you can beat him up one side and down the other, and he's just going to keep getting back up. And if he could have gotten back up, he would have kept fighting. But I think the technicality part of the fight, or the technical part of the fight, is that Travis Brown has a killer mount, and that's the one thing that I think is not certainly being executed at a very high level these days in MMA. If somebody gets in mount, the fight's over. Where I think you rewind the clock 10 years, guys knew what to do in mount, and they just don't know now. And I don't know if it's in dojos and gyms across the country that they're just not putting guys in mount and having people rain punches on them and try and figure out how to get out, because they just don't put them in those bad positions because they're more worried about backpack or taking the back, and so they defend that. But there's lots of people that don't have an answer when Travis Brown is on your chest, or Luke Rockhold is on your chest, or RDA is on your chest, and you just have no way to get out. And like, I know that that's easier said than done, because when a dude's raining punches down on you and you're bucking and you can't get away from him, but there are ways in jiu-jitsu to get out of those positions that I'm not seeing happening in the UFC.
It's a full circle. If you watch the first Ultimate Fighter in that era of time, when it was Forrest Griffin and Randy Couture was reigning supreme, those getting the back or getting a full mount, you'd just be like, oh, well, this fight's over, and you'd start like looking for your next bag of Cheetos.
Right, yeah.
You know, well,
Poober pizza rolls in the oven. Right?
Then everyone could defend that for about 6 or 7 years, and so people stopped using it because everyone could escape it. So now it's become full circle where they haven't probably been in that position over and over and over. It wasn't the end-all, be-all to the fight, so people stopped using it. But then you take Travis Brown, who's, 255, 260?
Something like that. Yeah. I don't remember what he weighed in, but
6'7".
Yeah.
Yeah, put that on your chest with those huge levers that he has of knees and elbows and arms.
And remember, you have one eye and one shoulder.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very difficult thing to get out of. So, I mean, if there's a shining spot, Travis Brown certainly has a killer mount. That said, I don't want to shower him with accolades, because I think he's just becoming this dirty, dirty fighter in this weight class, and a guy who was a contender at one point that I can't get into what he's doing right now. He's not one of my favorite guys right now.
It's unfortunate, because watching him fight, it was one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. He was one of my top favorites for a while, and you're right. He's starting to slowly fall down my favorite.
Well, because
ladder.
It went from okay. He had that move for a couple fights where, Andy, he would pin guys against the octagon and do that very close to 12-6, but he would skirt the rules a little bit and elbow them into unconsciousness. And it was brutal, but it was effective, and it was within the rules. And I think everybody was like, okay, just fall down and call it good. Don't take that damage. You're stuck, and this man is going to, end your career, right? But it feels to me that that is morphed into, well, if I can get away with that, what else can I get away with? And that leads us to Sunday night, where you're watching this fight going, I don't care that you won. I'm not going to move you up in the rankings. I don't want to see you in a title contention. I want to see somebody come down and beat you, because I just don't think that that was a victory. I think you cheated to get Mitrione in a position where he couldn't win. You slammed him on the mat in a way that he couldn't defend himself. And that probably would have happened regardless, but I think it's compounded by the fact that you can't see and you're in extreme pain. If you've ever had your eye poked, it's not a very pleasant thing. And if, most of us have not had our eye poked while being pummeled on by a 270-pound dude with just weapons for days. So it's hard for me to come out of this and be like, yeah, I can't wait to see his next fight. Cause I'm going, I can't wait to see you fight on Fight Pass. That's where you should go.
You're not going to watch that, are you?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. I didn't think you watched those.
No. Well, I mean, I've been starting to, because, as we were talking last week, they're doing a great job of putting some cool stuff on there. That Paul Felder-Cruikshank fight was awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see if they can bear any fruit, not to get on a total aside, but you make a joke, we'll get on a side. If they can bear any fruit from this Anderson Bisping thing, because if they can build this into something, because I'm all in, and we've talked about this, I'm all in. If they can give me a platform that allows me to continue to be cord cutters and see all the content,
oh, yeah.
I'll buy your pay-per-views. And if you put everything else on Fight Pass in some way, shape, or form, if you can't do it at the time because you've got a contract with FS1, but I can see it on Tuesday, I think that's a totally easy way to kind of bridge the gap. But all the content needs to be there, and you need to continue to make these Fight Pass cards more interesting than the prelims, which I thought this last weekend they were.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously the one you touched on coming up with Bisping and Silva, like, that's by far the biggest fight that's ever going to be on Fight Pass. And
for now,
as of now. And I haven't went ahead yet and used my free trial, and I probably will use it for that fight.
And they're modeling that, of course, they're modeling after what the WWE does. They give away WrestleMania every year. They give everyone a free month that has, you know, either has subscribed or and gone away or hasn't at all. They're like, watch WrestleMania. It's our biggest thing of the year. The Rock will be there. Ronda Rousey will be there. Steve Austin. Right. Watch that for free and then tell us if you want to buy in. And so this is the same sort of thing. Watch Anderson and Bisping, which I think most people are super excited about because we've been waiting for this fight for a long time. But they've got to follow it up with stuff that you want to watch. And as exciting as it is to watch them scour the countryside with Matt Serra and Nick the Tooth looking for somebody to beat up, you know, CM Punk, I don't know that that's going to keep people giving you $9 a month.
I agree with that. I mean, making good content that is worth watching. And I think they're doing a good job and starting to go down the right path with it. So hopefully it continues to evolve. And that'll be one of those things, like you said, people that are cutting the cord. If you can get all of your UFC content there and it's interesting and engaging and there's good fights on there, I can see to continue to grow.
Well, and it fits the brand, right, Andy? Because they want to control all the content. They had to sign these deals with Spike and Viacom and then Fox and FS1 because they need to scale the business. But at the same time, they want to control all of the other facets of what's happening. So it makes sense that they would want to trim up the amount of time it takes you to get the content on Fight Pass, because it all ends up there eventually. But depending on what it is, like, they've done some interesting things in the past 6 months where the Holly Holm beating of Ronda Rousey was up in 16 days. And I've never seen the pay-per-views up that quickly. But it was clear that they wanted people to continue to watch it again and again and again so they could build the star and then build up momentum for whatever, whenever this rematch is going to happen, that's not going to happen at UFC 200.
Yeah, right. So getting that stuff on there quicker. And I've always paid attention to how fast a pay-per-view event comes on FS1 or even sometimes on Fox Sports Detroit or whatever. And last night I was flipping through the channels and I saw that like UFC 187 was on there. I was like, oh, that's really not that long ago. It was Rumble Johnson and Cormier.
Yeah,
but
like, oh, yeah, and this for a minute. And I like that they're doing the stuff that makes sense like that, right? They want to put Rumble Johnson back out there because he's fighting Bader next weekend, and so that, you know, they want to get you to, oh, that guy, he's fighting Ryan Bader, and yeah, Ryan Bader hates Cormier, and Rumble fought Cormier, and so this makes perfect sense.
And it's
so,
on free TV.
And it's on free TV. I can't wait to see that. So the other fight, obviously, to talk about from the Fight Night 81 is the Pettis Alvarez fight, which, you know, if you come out of that fight thinking to yourself that there's a contender in that matchup, I don't think you've been watching the right fight, because I watched that and I said this right before the show started, that to me, Anthony Pettis has become the Benson Henderson of the end of 2015, early 2016. Like, he's nowhere near title contention, as you said, Nick, and people just aren't really interested in watching these fights, especially if they're going to go like this. And last night, Ariel Helwani announced that they have booked Ferguson and Johnson too, because of some scheduling conflicts, that Ferguson wants to fight before his next child is born in April, and it just didn't work out. So Ariel had gone ahead and done some guest booking, which is always fun to do on Twitter, and put Pettis and Nate Diaz, which I think we'll collectively think is a good fight, and then put Alvarez against Nurmagomedov. But I don't know that Alvarez has a chance against Nurmagomedov, but he beat Pettis, so he should get the better end of that stick, I think. I don't know.
Well, I mean, just to get back to the beginning of it, in that style of fight, watching him just, essentially hold him down, it's, a lot of people are saying that, you know, Pettis was overwhelmed the whole time, and it's true, he was, but I think that's everything that he could possibly do to win that fight. He couldn't even take a risk of trying to ground and pound that fight out in order to make it happen. So, looking what's going to
happen.
You're
meaning Alvarez, right?
Sorry, yeah, exactly, Alvarez. Watching Alvarez do everything that he possibly could to Pettis, who's not known as a really good wrestler. So watching him move up in the rankings, Pettis has world-class striking. Everyone knows it. He doesn't have world-class wrestling. The next three or four people up in the line, they all have both of those things. So I think you're going to watch Alvarez struggle again like he was earlier.
Sure, but I mean, I to me, this is a lesson, though, of all of these guys that are in that wheelhouse, that you have to evolve or the sport's over for you. If you don't have world-class wrestling, what the hell do you think you're going to do against Nurmagomedov? What do you think you're going to do against that guy? Because I'm going to tell you, he's going to pick you up and throw you across the octagon and then kick you in the face, and the fight's going to be over. Like, we're not at the point. When you see the evolution of these guys in the top four or five spots in any of these divisions, there's a constant evolution of the guys, and you're seeing the champs now, and who knows how long all of these champs are going to hold their belt. But there was a photo that Esther Lin, who is one of the best MMA photographers literally on planet Earth, put out on Twitter this week that showed all of the champs from the beginning of 2015. I think two of them still have the belt right now, which should tell you everything you need to know about this sport, is that if you're not evolving, it's passing you by as you are standing here. And you cannot stand in the octagon at 155 and go, I have world-class striking, but I can't defend the takedown. Because I was talking to a friend last night specifically about Ferguson. And Ferguson, to me, his scrambles are some of the best in the sport because he's not scrambling to get out. He's scrambling to choke you to death with a Darce choke all of the time. That's what he's doing, right? Where he's looking to finish from these positions where guys are looking to stand up and re-engage. And he's always looking to finish. So against a guy like Pettis, he would wipe the floor with him. If you look at the way Nurmagomedov can do takedowns from any part of your body, he's looking to pound you in the ground from every position. He doesn't care how great your world-class striking is as soon as he touches you. This is what's happening at 55, specifically to a guy like Pettis. That's why I said last week that this is a really important test for him, because if he doesn't pass it, the game's over.
And I mean, how far away, how long is he into his career? He's not going to become a world-class wrestler at that time. And it was for the
longest.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, it's.
But he always hung his hat on the fact that he had really good jiu-jitsu. He tacked off of his back, and you could see Alvarez didn't let that happen. But that's also why Alvarez didn't take any risks in that fight whatsoever.
But this is the other evolution of the sport, Andy, is that you've got guys that it may not have been the most exciting fight, but we're still playing human chess. And if he knows that you've got great guard, he's not going to get in your guard. That's stupid. He's going to nullify everything that you're good at, a la GSP, and win the fight. You may not think that GSP's fights were all that great over the length of his career, but that's what he was doing. His fight IQ was off the chain. And in this particular fight, on this particular night, Alvarez had the fight IQ. He knew that you would beat him standing up, and he knew that he shouldn't get in guard, so he didn't let either one of those things happen, and he drowned you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really, I mean, that was a fight where I was excited when the bell rang for the first round, and then it was really that shoulder into Pettis' chest and stomach on the side of the cage. A few quick takedowns and Pettis getting up and over for 15 minutes. And then they would break. Every once in a while, Pettis would get out and get in the middle. I'm like, all right, maybe something exciting will happen here. And then it's like, okay, he's doing what he should be doing, because there's no way he's losing this fight, even though no one's having a great time watching it. But he's going to win. And then it'll be like, oh, okay, Alvarez beat Pettis, so he needs to fight someone else high in the rankings next. So,
but Alvarez, I think, has been largely a disappointment since he came over to the UFC. He hasn't been as destructive as he was, you know, in the other organizations. And so I'm with you. I think he's going to struggle is a very polite word as to what's going to happen to him next, because he's not the world-class athlete that these guys are at 155. And when you have, you know, a death machine in Tony Ferguson skyrocketing up the ranks, I don't think anyone's going to want to fight him. And if you're kidding yourself, I know I'm a fanboy because he's from Muskegon and went to Grand Valley and all of that stuff, but I'm telling you, you're kidding yourself if you don't think probably the most exciting fight this year from a technical standpoint would be Connor and Ferguson. You're an idiot. An absolute idiot.
I mean, take Connor out of the equation. Anytime you put Ferguson in the cage, and it doesn't even matter who it is, I mean, you put him against Alvarez, and he's going to be doing some crazy stuff while he's got his head in his chest.
Sure.
It's just the thing that makes him so exciting and why he is skyrocketing. He's not grinding these out like Alvarez is. So when it's a weighing on the scales of who should be the next title shot contender, who should get the next title shot, clearly it's going to be Ferguson. They're going to try to get him up there, because the UFC, I think, would like to see Alvarez-type people kind of go away, but they can't, because they're undeniable in the fact that they can hold somebody down.
Well, and I think, you know, from 5 to 15, there's always going to be people in there that they can grind out with. There's always going to be people in there that they can just... I mean, how long has Clay Guida stuck around when he's not even in contention to be top 5, but he just hangs around because there's always a guy that he can out cardio. There's always a guy that he can out cardio, and that's how he sticks around. But I think when you look at Ferguson, and if he beats Johnson for the first time, you know, gets his loss back, to me, that's that's an exciting fight. I don't know that he beats Conor McGregor, but it sure as hell will be an exciting fight because you got two guys who are doing very different stuff than everybody else on the roster right now.
Well, and that's where you're going to see, I think, the sport evolve. Is it is going to be the person doing something very different until everyone starts to catch up on what he's doing. And I don't know if Ferguson and what he does is replicatable, because it's just not something that – it's not something that comes natural to people except for him for some reason. But it's because of his comfort of landing in a bad spot, mm-hmm. and then he'll attack from there and he doesn't care. But he could end up in a positive spot on that side.
Well, and that's what he uses the scramble for. Like, he's not scrambling to disengage. He's scrambling to re-engage. He's scrambling to keep the fight going, as opposed to lots of guys use wrestling from a defense. If you remember back to John Jones in the Shogun fight, right? John Jones was using jiu-jitsu as a defense. He wasn't trying to sub Shogun. He was trying to not get submitted by Shogun. And that's what I mean. Like, most of the wrestling right now is used for that, in the same way that we have guys that aren't practicing being mounted and how to get out of them. Most guys are using wrestling to get out and re-engage. You know, if you're a la Anthony Pettis, you want to be standing up and you want to be throwing bombs, you're going to use your defensive wrestling to do that, where a guy like Ferguson is continuing to go forward even though he's in a terrible position. He's continuing to scramble forward.
Or even some of the times when he goes in from the standing position with his, like, roll-in takedown, I mean, he's trying to get in. He's attempting to get in some weird position sometimes because he's so comfortable being all tangled up and getting in the right position after that.
Well, it's one of those things we talk about. Andy and I actually last night were talking about Floyd Mayweather and saying that, is there anybody that could fight as many fights as him in the UFC and still have a perfect record? I just don't see that happening.
No.
And it's just because there's so many tools. It's like, you could win a dozen baseball matches or games, and then if you put them on skates, all of a sudden a hockey player is going to win. I mean, there's so many aspects of it. In boxing, there's only two weapons.
Yep.
So if you start limiting yourself to those weapons, like Pettis has been, where he's saying, I have essentially eight weapons. I've got my hands, knees, elbows, kicks, you know, and I'm not going to be playing this game. Well, then someone's like, well, I will play that game, and then it's over. And so I think that you see Ferguson, who's like, I'll play all the games, and I'll start making up a few on my own, and I'm going to make you play them with me. And that's why he's going to be the next one. I think he's got his hands full with Johnson.
Sure, yeah. I'm not saying that's an easy fight at all, but if he gets by him, I think he's revenged a loss. He'll take a break for the birth of his kid, which gives Conor plenty of time to take a break. I don't know. I mean, I know they're still talking about it, but I don't know if they're going to put Conor and Aldo at 200. Maybe they do that. And then, so if they did that, that'd be July. Maybe Conor, if he gets the belt at 55, maybe he takes Ferguson on at the end of the year. I don't know. You know, if I was going to do some guest booking, that's what I would look at doing.
Well, he's been saying that, well, I'll fight both weight classes because I'm going to stay active. So I'll be interested to see, really, if he does win the 155, where did they go next? So then he's back down to defend 145, then defending 155 again, like
that
back
is,
and forth.
And that's what his coach said right after he won the belt, is that he went on the MMA Hour, which is 7.5 hours long, and said that's exactly what the plan would be, is to have 3 or 4 months off in between so that they can adjust weights one way or the other, but that he would do, you know, bounce back and forth. I don't know, because nutrition is not a thing I know a ton about, and when it comes to weight loss and weight gain, I don't know how realistic that becomes when you add a third weight class. Like, if you were to go up to 170, I don't know, 170 to 45 to 50 to 70. I mean, how many times can you really do that? Really?
I don't see that being able to, that jump from 145 to 155
10
being
pounds.
10, but then 155 to 170, like, I know that was thrown out there. I don't know if that's ever feasible when you look at how big somebody like Robbie Lawler really is in comparison to McGregor, and that huge weight swing, that gap of 15 pounds then in between.
Well, the gap of 15 pounds and his fighting style, he takes a lot of damage to give damage. And, I Robbie Lawler is not a guy that you want to take some damage from just to trade with him.
Well, and I mean, I think, look at Conor. He does take a page out of Chael's book. And he's talking about the next two weight classes next to him so that he has places to pivot if there was ever an unfortunate event where he did end up losing one of them.
He's never going to lose. He's going to be 40-1 or whatever. He's lost one? Just one, right?
He's lost two.
Two. 40. Two. He'll be 40-2.
Yeah.
It's my call. One to Feldler, wasn't it?
No, it was Joe Duffy.
Joe Duffy. Yeah, I'm sorry. My bad.
So yeah, then he can keep coming to press conferences with his El Chapo shirt on.
Yes, his El Chapo shirt and 58 belts that he has. Other couple things to talk about: Edmund Tarverian, I should say, who is Ronda Rousey's cornerman, has had his license in California suspended, which sounds very clickbaity. If you see it on the internet, there are some extenuating circumstances. Apparently, he misrepresented himself when they asked about felonies. Have you had any felonies? He put no. When the answer is yes, he had some sort of thing in 2010. So they've suspended it. He hasn't been suspended in Nevada or anywhere else for that matter, because you get due process. Unlike Steve Avery, you get due process in the state of California. So they're going to go through this process and see what comes of it. But right now, he cannot corner anybody in the state of California. And when you couple that together with what Ronda's mom has been saying about him, this will be a really interesting year for Edmund, because I don't know what will happen by the end of the year, depending on what happens with Ronda. I know we talked about this last week, that it's totally conceivable she fights one more time, and then that's, you know, we're on to do 28 movies a year.
Now, I wasn't even under the impression that felonies were... Or I didn't know that you had to have a license.
Apparently,
in
California, you do. I don't know where else you do. I didn't have time to look that up. But in California, you do. It was... He was arrested in 2010, two counts of felony identity theft and one count of misdemeanor resisting arrest. And he served one day in jail with a credit of one day and then 3 years of probation. So, I mean, he's served his time. So I who knows what will come of this, because it's not like he's... To your point, which is I think where you're going right now, I don't know how that has any sort of bearing whatsoever on your ability to corner, let alone the culture of boxing and MMA. I mean, felony convictions seem like they're pretty regular.
That's where I was getting. You beat me to it. I mean, is it just because he withheld that information? Is that where they're going on?
I guess, but I don't. Who knows? I mean, it's been 5+ years, so maybe he wanted to forget it. I don't know.
So I'm glad that I've never had to put myself in that situation where I had to consider putting yes or no. But can you imagine filling that out and saying, have you ever had a felony conviction, and knowing in your head that you have, and saying, no, maybe they'll never check.
Right.
Maybe they haven't for a while.
Maybe they won't spend the $11 and run a background check. Maybe they won't do that, but they did. And so we'll keep you up to date on that. And the other one is, we talked about it last week, but it is coming to fruition. BJ Penn's back. Hooray. Hooray.
I have this weird feeling about that.
Here we go.
Because the last couple times where he's been standing in the cage at the end of the fight and he's said he's done and he's totally beat up and bloody and he said, my kids don't need to see me like this and all this stuff. So then he's back and now he's at Jackson's right now. And
yep.
Everyone there is all geeked out. I saw photos of Cerrone and Jones and a bunch of guys all with BJ Penn having fun training with him. I wish he was just there for like a 2-week session and then leaving and not fighting anymore. Because he was one of my favorite fighters. And it's just like, why? You should just be done fighting now.
Well, so Nick and I were talking last week about this for probably 15 minutes because we're both trying to figure out two things. Who on the roster do you think is a good matchup for him? Because at this point, and feel free to send your hate mail to me after I say this, at this point, I would venture to guess that Sage Northcutt might be able to beat BJ Penn. I mean, he's 1-5-0-1 in his last 7.
I actually want to see that fight now.
You know, like, joke all you want, but tell me what weight class he goes to and tell me who would be a great matchup for him.
Well, I mean, he was the first one that started almost that Conor, like, I get to call what I'm doing next kind of guy, where he's going to be doing that kind of thing. So it's, I think the challenge is as hard as his camp, and he wants to make it. If anybody's going to make a resurgence for him, unfortunately, it will be Greg Jackson, and he will get him a couple of wins, and he will be the one managing what he does and make sure that he's working hard.
CM Punk, then, that's who you're picking?
That's who I picked last week, and that's who I'm picking this week. We're building it up.
Yeah, I mean, he may, but it's not like you can put BJ Penn in against tomato cans and people aren't going to smell that. Right? They're going to expect BJ Penn to fight Carlos Condit. Like, that was what you would expect. I'm not saying nobody, please do not do that to BJ Penn, but that's what I would expect. I'm not expecting him to fight a number 16 or number 18 guy at 55 or 70. I'm expecting top five.
Well, can't you have, I mean, is there a space? Bellator has proved it. Isn't there a space for feature fights?
They're called freak shows.
Freak shows, feature fights, whatever you want to call them.
Like when you're putting Ken Shamrock and Hoist Gracie on TV, it's a freak show. And so is there space for it? Yeah, over in Bellator. I don't know that the UFC wants to go down that path. They took enough trash from the Sage Northcutt thing, right? And he could win next weekend. And, you know, then he's won three in a row in the UFC. So, I mean, how long does he have to get dumped on? Then you couple that with what we talked about last week where you've got CM Punk rated in the video game 70% higher or 80% higher than everybody else on the roster. So you're already dealing with this freak show element. I don't know that you want to do it again, unless that's, like you said, unless that's what you're doing. If it's CM Punk and BJ Penn, okay.
Well, I mean, what now that they just introduced that Mike Tyson is going to be in the next UFC game.
Sakuraba's in it.
Yeah.
Ross Rutan's in it.
It's like, okay, I get it. Give him some ratings, because if you want to be that guy, you don't want him to fall over as soon as someone stares at him too hard.
But the difference is, like, Mike Tyson is clearly, a joke, right? And I don't mean joke in that he is a joke, but he's not a UFC fighter. He's in there as a shtick for you to buy the game. So I could play as Mike Tyson fighting Conor McGregor or whatever, right? CM Punk, to go back to our conversation last week, is a guy who's trying to really make a go, air quotes, really make a go at it in the UFC who hasn't fought yet. Mike Tyson is the heavyweight champion, or was the heavyweight champion at one point. Well, in a real sport.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, how far? Clearly, they're going down the farther and farther down the line of fantasy of the game. They're not trying to build a simulator, a flight simulator of fighting.
I've never been claiming they're going to build a flight simulator, but I just think that rating echoes what they think is going to happen. And I just, in my mind, as much as I think BJ Penn is a terrible idea to go back in the UFC, I don't see anybody that matters in the UFC not wiping the floor with CM Punk. I mean, Andy, you said 40 minutes ago that Dominic Cruz is a fragile champion. CM Punk has had that many injuries training in a gym.
Yeah.
With not competing for real.
Well, it's interesting. I think they don't mind just holding him out as long as they need to, and because people keep talking about him and he's a name, and then someday they're going to hopefully get him a fight. There was that one guy on that regional card 2 weekends ago that was like, I'm here and I'm going to fight. I'm going to be.
Because he was part of the reality show.
Yeah. So now that guy does have an upcoming fight. In the
but
UFC.
He has to win it to fight CM Punk.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And then pray to God that CM Punk doesn't trip on his way to the heavy bags and hurt himself again.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. I hadn't really thought about BJ Penn and CM Punk.
It's a terrible idea. Do not. Your brother is not right. That is not what they should do.
Yeah, that has been in my mindset.
Because the look in your eye is like, I mean, I could see what Nick is thinking. No, that's a terrible idea.
Nick and
Joe Silva are not the same person. So
I still am a little confused on the big beef between BJ Penn and
Nick Lentz.
And that fight is one I don't really care to watch very
much. Because Nick Lentz will kill him.
Yeah. And then that's not what you want to see, though, if you like BJ Penn in the past. BJ Penn comes back from retirement and faces Nick Lentz and gets pounded.
Lentz wants that because, who doesn't want to retire a legend, But, yeah, I don't think BJ Penn can talk all about lions and lambs and whatever analogy he wants to use, but that's not a fight you want at all.
I wonder if this whole thing has been brought on by BJ Penn being 5 years too late in a cleaned up sport. And now he thinks he can make a run because he was always the one chirping, going natural. He's fighting all these guys that are on the on steroids and doing all these performance enhancing drugs. And maybe it's 5 years too late, but maybe he thinks that the run is there for him now because he remembers what he was like and who he was fighting, which were people that were on performance enhancers.
Okay, let's deconstruct that sentence for a second and let's rewind the clock 10 days. You tell me, Nick Bailing, how does BJ Penn do if he fights, pick either one of these guys, Joe Duffy or Dustin Poirier? How does he do in that fight?
Terribly.
Right. Both clean guys.
Yeah.
Both guys test clean. Both guys are death machines, right? And these are guys who fans of the sport know, but mainstream fans might not really know. I mean, they tuned in to Fight Pass to see it because Joe Duffy's the last guy to beat Conor McGregor, right? Like that thing. But Joe Duffy's going to beat BJ Penn.
Yeah. No, I'm playing.
And I'm not kidding. You send me all the trash you want to. I'm not kidding. I think Sage Northcutt could make a go of that.
So is there anybody sitting here today that we think BJ Penn can beat?
No, but I mean, if we're gonna guest book for the fact that, you know, if it could do somebody some world of good for their career, let's put Kevin Lee in there. Can Kevin Lee smash BJ Penn? Because I mean, if we're going to pick somebody who we want to get huge rewards from smashing a legend, let's just have Kevin Lee do it.
Yeah.
There isn't a single, I don't think there's a single person on the roster that I would be comfortable watching a 1-5-0-1 fighter who's well past his prime get in the ring. Because all I see in my mind every time I say the words BJ Penn is the Diaz beating. That's all I see in my mind, and I never want to see that again.
Yeah, I think that was that first one where he stood there and said that he was done because he didn't want his kids to see him like
it's
this.
All I think about. And,
yeah,
and you know,
I know where I was that night.
Right, so do I. And like, there aren't... Diaz is on another level as a fighter, but everybody else is really close now. Then maybe back then they weren't as close. They're really close now.
I agree. So I don't know where he goes.
Anderson Silva?
Yes.
Nick's matchmaking ability.
Yes, Nick's matchmaking.
He's a yes,
yes
man.
Yes.
Do you
here's one for you that I think you will like, and we'll leave it. We'll talk about this and leave it at this. GSP, BJ Penn?
Sure. I mean, if they're both in camp, let's see it one more time if that's what they want. Like I said, let's see some feature fights here. Let's see some people that, you know, they're way early in their career, they're way late in their career. However you want to match it, weight classes don't matter. BJ Penn doesn't care about weight classes. CM Punk apparently can be any weight class, and he's going all the way down to probably 135 now from when he started saying maybe 185. It doesn't matter. Let's get – if he's going to do it, let's get him in there, and let's watch him do it. I mean, I don't want to see it, but I'm going to watch
it. So bad.
So get them in there.
All right. You can follow along all weekend long. I think it's just a World Series of Fighting card this weekend. We've got the UFC again next weekend, as you will have Rumble Johnson and Bader on the main card, as well as Sage Northcutt making his triumphant return to the UFC. So if you've missed him in the last 90 days, he's back. So exciting news for everybody.
And I was thinking maybe next week we could break down Ronda Rousey's performance on SNL.
Let's do that. We will break that down minute by minute, step by step. We'll do that next. It's Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.